Win, win, win.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan, Weiss, Nick, and Will here with you once again. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. Take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraras. Follow Will at 27. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars, leave us a kind review. We're back. Giants win 14-7 and simultaneously do not ruin their Caleb or Drake chances. What a day. What was it, the game? We got a lot to talk about. Will's also got a scoop. Call that a teaser in the biz. And let's get into it. How is everyone?
I'm doing good. Always good to beat the Commanders, I think. For somebody like me who lives in this area,
it's getting to be like a tradition at this point.
I got a lot of Commander fans that are always texting me. They sort of act like high school kids, you know, like they're always texting me when the Giants are losing to the Cowboys and Eagles, but then when the Giants are playing the Commanders, they're typically not around, so
they're quiet.
Yeah, selfishly, I think it's nice. But obviously, not going to sugarcoat things. Obviously, for somebody that's about the tank and about the high draft pick, you're not happy. And I'm not going to sell you on anything. But on the flip side, I think there's a lot of positives to take away from this. I think the Giants' defense, after being a bunch of losers earlier in the season, I think have really turned the corner. We're seeing a lot better play over the last 2 or the last 3 weeks. I think Buffalo last week, and I think against Seattle, they were really good too. We gave up 17 points, and I think that's enough to win in this league. Obviously, the Giants only scored 3, but there's a lot to like. And then when you look at sort of their schedule, it is the lighter part, specifically with the quarterbacks they're playing. And as you saw today with Sam Howell and how Wink Martindale sort of had him in a blender all night, you start to look at Zach Wilson, you start to look at whoever the Raiders are going to start. You know, and then Mac Jones down the road and Jordan Love, you know, there's a chance come December this team can fight and claw their way back into it on the backs of their defense. Now their offense is going to have to show up. And I think a lot of that's going to be determined on how healthy they can get down the road, specifically on the offensive line. But Tyrod Taylor looked all right, looked like a quality backup that he is. Kudos to him, deserved the win. I wish he would have got one last week too, but that's pretty much it. It wasn't pretty. No, I don't know what people are looking for out of this game, but for me, it's like, okay, won a game against a really bad team. Let's see what happens the rest of the way down, the rest of the road.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much share those exact sentiments. We spoke very early on in the season when the defense was just giving up 40 points, 30 points, that there were just too many dudes on this defense for them to be as bad and to stay as bad as they were. And we're definitely seeing them turn a corner. Bobby O looks incredible. Probably the best Giants linebacker I've seen in my lifetime.
I would say he's at the center of this turnaround.
100%.
Yeah.
Pass rushers getting home. Leo had a good game. Dex had a good game. Now, again, it's like one of those games where you have to temper expectations because I believe statistically Sam Howell was not only the only quarterback sacked more than Daniel Jones before Daniel Jones got injured, but he also created more sacks than Daniel Jones did. So this was not an offensive line worthy of bragging about how good your defense does against them. And certainly the same can be said for the quarterback. But still, you play your schedule. And when these type of teams come up, you hope your defense eats. And they did not eat. They feasted. So it was good to see. Not just along the defensive line. Deonte Banks looks good. He has looked, at worst, unnoticeable this season. And at his best, he's looked like, okay, this guy could be our CB1 in, you know, another year or two. Very, very impressed with him. I thought Trey Hawkins played fine for what he was being asked. Again, it's like 6th round pick. I look at him in the same light. I sort of look at a Micah McFadden, like mid to late round pick being asked way more than what he's supposed to be doing right now. And he's holding up. So listen, defense was fine. Not going to, you know, be taking victory laps for them doing this against the Commanders again, like we've been speaking about for years at this point. Do it against the Eagles. Do it against the Cowboys. Do it against some of the top teams in the league. But likewise said, at this point in the season, play your schedule. They have some weaker opponents coming up, not just bad quarterbacks, but some bad offensive lines. So I do expect that type of dominance to continue, and we'll see what happens.
It was great to see them get home for once. We'd seen them flirt with a lot of sacks where they've gotten their hands on the quarterback and the quarterback's been able to wiggle their way out of it, extend plays. That wasn't the case today. The defensive backs did a nice job. Banks, as you mentioned, the one play that sticks out in my mind was when they sent him on a nickel blitz and he got clean on Howell, and Howell had no chance today. They did a really good job of hurrying up his process, making Howell either move into the pocket where the pressure was coming from by doing creative things. One of the things that they were able to do today that they haven't been a lot of the season was the simulated pressures where they bring 7-8 guys down to the line of scrimmage, and then they bail 3 or 4 of those guys out in the coverage and change the look. And when you're a quarterback like Howell that doesn't have a ton of experience, that doesn't process the game at a particularly high level, that type of stuff it's really good to have in your toolbox. And it's something that the defense in theory can do more going forward, is they're going to, in theory, be in more of these games as opposed to what we've seen where they just kind of have to absorb the run best they can and hope they don't get killed over the top on some of the shots other teams take. But yeah, this was a ham sandwich game. It's fine. It does the job. You ate something, but there's nothing to note here. There's nothing impressive. They won a game against a bad team. I don't know how Washington has 3 wins, by the way. I didn't realize they had 3 wins coming into today, but they did their jobs, nothing to write home about. If they win 2 or 3 of the next couple, then we can start talking about, well, maybe this team can make some noise in the second half. But until they start winning more than just, you know, against the really, really bad teams, nothing special.
So I was doing great all day. I really had a fantastic day. I had a good tailgate. I was expecting a win. I was a little less confident than I was at the other two home games, where I was even more confident we were going to get a win. And obviously, we're outscored by a total of 64-3.
And by the way, Will, man of the people, invited into a suite for the game and said no to sit with his people.
Yeah, my buddy, a Washington fan, he had a nice little invitation for me. I wouldn't leave my section for the world. As that said, he didn't have a very good time at the end of the game. He sent me some confused message about how he was going to make a burner account and start complaining on Twitter. And I haven't heard from him since. So, you know, Washington fans, we love you. Hope you're okay. You know, it's another chapter in 8, what's turning into a nice little story for us. You know, it's not really over the Commanders because we've only beaten the Commanders themselves once going into this year.
Washington team.
Whatever identity they want to, you know, they want to go with, it's losing to us.
Whatever their pronouns are.
Which is a lot of fun. You mentioned Sam Howell taking sacks, and that brought me back to something. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see a friend of mine, Travis May, whose Twitter, good account, you should follow it, covered a lot of college stuff. His handle is FF_TravisM. And he wrote a couple of weeks ago a little analysis he did. How much sack ownership is attributed to each NFL QB? And he basically said, here are the expected sacks by, you know, how much time to throw, win rates that you see. Here are the number of sacks. Then he charted out who is above average in this metric and who is below average. And Travis is a Titans fan. And I was the first one to see this thing that he did. So I retweeted it and made its way a little bit onto Giants Twitter. You had people immediately, because Jones was the second worst ranked player, determining that Travis did this out of, you know, his bias and wanting to, you know, take down, you know, Daniel Jones, you know, a Titans fan. Anyway, it was really amusing to see that assumption made for a completely different pocket of Twitter. But Sam Howell was the one worst quarterback than Daniel Jones by this metric. You can really see it during the game. There was a lot of really head-scratching coaching decisions kind of in philosophy coming from Washington.
I mean, that's par for the course with Ron Rivera. We'll get into that momentarily.
I'm going to give you one quick hot take. I think a big win for the Giants was Adoree Jackson not playing. I think Ron Rivera thought that would mean that our secondary would be very weak and he should get away from the run and throw the ball. And last year they were really effective, just jamming it down our throats with Brian Robinson. Yeah, we upgraded a little bit of our interior depth around, you know, our two guys, but I think they, you know, really said, okay, maybe we can just start throwing on us. And, you know, I'm a big believer in coaches outsmarting their selves for what's really the best of their team. And I think this is a great example of that. I can't understand why they, you know, why they didn't, you know, run the ball. Obviously there's, you know, the holding penalty they accepted and, you know, turning away the fourth down, a lot of just kind of weird stuff, but it did seem like, you know, Dexter really won his matchups. The line, the defensive line really had Howell in hell. It didn't seem like Howell did any favors to his linemen in terms of making them look better, which is something I'm sure we'll talk about, that skill in a quarterback.
Yes. Yeah, we will. And by the way, Will, let me compliment you on not only your audio quality, but you haven't cut out once. So a very rare kudos to the Spectrum techs that were at your apartment a few weeks ago, because you sound fabulous.
I appreciate it. I mean, I'm trying my best to keep my voice, which is surprisingly still existing after that game.
Yeah, one thing I heard when you guys talk about Rivera and the offensive game plan from, you know, people that I know that cover the team, the dynamic with Washington and how their coaching staff is structured is a little bit different than the norm. Eric Bieniemy has a lot of control about the offensive game plan. And I'm not going to say he can have the higher say over Ron Rivera, but Bieniemy came to Washington with the understanding that there wasn't going to be a lot of meddling in the offensive game plan. So a lot
that's the only reason it made sense to make a lateral move.
So a lot of what you saw today on offense, yeah, obviously Rivera's the head coach, but Bieniemy shoulders a lot of the blame because, like Will said, no double teaming Dexter Lawrence, not running the football, just dropping back and throwing the ball. You know, I don't know how many times Sam Howell dropped back, but 0 for 17 on third downs. They were just not, and they weren't in a lot of third and longs. There were a lot of them were third and, you know,
seven, I didn't know that stat. They were 0 for 17 on third down.
One for 17. So. Yeah, I think Washington is a team that's headed toward some big changes this offseason in terms of their football structure with new ownership. So, yeah, that's going downhill fast.
Sense to see them trade Chase Young.
I think they're going to trade one of him or Montez Sweat. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. That was the rumor. I think I want to say Florio reported that during the week that they were listening on Chase. It might have been it was either him or someone at the Athletic, I forget. And yeah, absolutely. Changes have to come considering you have new ownership. That's just kind of a given. And I feel like Bieniemy only took that job because there was kind of an understanding that there was not a direct path to eventually becoming the head coach, but a path to becoming the head coach.
I don't know how long we have to watch. Like, it's really a problem in the NFL. Like, I don't know how to say it without sounding like a armchair GM, but every week there are head scratching decisions, and this is not just Washington, but from the moment that they hired Rivera, I didn't understand the fit. I didn't like it. He has so far proven me correct, but every week I just look at the people who still have head coaching jobs and I scratch my head. I really do. I mean, Brandon Staley is the perfect example. I would say Sean Payton if I wasn't convinced that he was doing it on purpose. Ron Rivera, it really is just...
There's a clip of Sean Payton last year literally saying...
Yeah, on Colin Cowherd's show, saying exactly. He thought Caleb Williams was generational.
And someone and the teams would take for.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he literally... Yeah, I mean, the evidence is out there, Goodell. If you want to go investigate, go ahead. I mean, thankfully they won today. They won, New England won, Chicago Bears won. So that was... We're very, very lucky that we're still in, I'll call it contention here. And for those, I want to say two things about the tank before we move on. I've been saying it since week two, week three, whenever we really started the tank. Everyone who's complaining that the Giants are going to win games to eliminate themselves from contention from pick one, pick two, pick three, whatever it is, so are the other teams. Did anyone think, based on how New England was playing, that they would go in there and beat Buffalo straight up, even with how Buffalo played last week? No. Well, come on. Did anyone think?
How about the points?
Yeah, there you go. That's why I said outright. Did anyone really? I mean, Green Bay is not a world killer, but based on how the Broncos are playing, I mean, whatever. And they snuck one out.
I picked Denver today, by the way.
Okay, good for you. The Panthers on bye this week. At this point, I mean, listen, I got to keep the shtick up for Twitter, but I really do think that the Panthers are going to be locked into number one because they're absolutely abysmal. They have quite possibly the most meddling ownership in the league, I would argue at this point. And you sort of have to hope that they are willing to stick with Bryce Young for more than a year. Although I could very much see like a Josh Rosen situation with Arizona.
For the timeout for the second time in a number of weeks.
Oh, the Bears have the pick. Yes. Dude, I literally forget this every 5 minutes.
Because you still can't believe the Panthers were that stupid.
Probably.
I don't blame the Panthers. I just think they took the wrong quarterback.
Why do I keep forgetting? So I'm literally reminded every day. Every single day, someone reminds
me. Usually when you're thinking about the worst team in the league, you're like, okay, they're going to get, the number one pick. But, you know, the Panthers obviously don't have the number one pick, so they are looking.
Okay, Will, you just said it. Panthers don't have the number one pick. Now, Nick, you say it. We're going to do this by repetition.
The Panthers do not have the number one pick. They do not own their draft
pick. Weiss.
The Panthers do not own their draft pick. It goes to Chicago.
So now we have to hope that Chicago is happy with Fields.
Or Tyson Bagel. What's that guy's name? Tyson
Baguette.
He was decent today. He was a lot better this week than last week. When he went in last week, it looked like they just found the guy off the street.
I didn't know who he was. We spoke about
this outright last week. He outright won the job from PJ Walker in camp this year. Like
Shout out PJ Walker, by the way.
They really liked him. And PJ Walker's winning games, so you know it's like that's a not no.
That game was insane, by the way. That Colts Browns game was insane.
I was so pissed because all I wanted was put on the Chargers Chiefs game, and that game went so long.
Before we get too far away from the Panthers, by the way, who don't have their own number one pick, Ethan.
Thank you.
Not having their number one pick means they have no incentive to tank, so they're going to be a trade deadline buyer. Which is like, 2019 Giants like level of dysfunction with where they are aligned, in their schedule. So who knows what's going to happen with, over there.
Yeah. I mean, the rumors have been for weeks that they're looking for a number one receiver. I don't know who they plan on on agreeing to trade them a number one receiver, but
Paris Campbell.
Yeah. Crazy. All right. Back to the Giants. Talk about the offense. Tyrod Taylor is better than Daniel Jones.
Tyrod Taylor does some things better than Daniel Jones, but I don't.
Overall, think he's he is a better. Overall,
he's a better quarterback.
Right now, he is a better quarterback. He is more equipped to run this offense. He is playing with more confidence. And I'm sorry, the team that is on the field with him has more confidence in him than they do in Daniel Jones, and that is evident. Evident.
I don't know how that's evident when he said it himself that he's the backup quarterback.
I'm not saying that the team thinks that he's the starting quarterback. I'm saying the team looks way more confident with him out there because they know that he's going to take shots. They know that he can make these throws. And the coaching staff very clearly has more confidence in him than they do Daniel Jones. With the play calls and the downfield shots, they do.
It seems like Tyrod is keeping his eyes down the field, which is something that,
he's manipulating the pocket. He's playing behind an offensive line that's as bad as Daniel Jones's.
And it's not just
it's not worse, bucket,
but I think he's just so much more multidimensional in where behind the line of scrimmage he's willing to go as a play kind of evolves. Like how many times do you see Jones just go to the right, run out of bounds with the entire play moving out of bounds? And just when I see Daniel Jones play, I get the sense, and I always felt this way with Mark Sanchez too, that it's like he's growing up like as he's playing football. Like I don't feel like he's that polished, mature kind of adult in the huddle. And I do feel that way about Tyrod. It's hard to really articulate in a more insightful way than
that's what I just said. You even the fans, even you Will as a fan, are more confident in Tyrod Taylor.
The conversation with Tyrod Taylor and Daniel Jones is something that we had last week. Is the salary gap, does the salary gap match the talent gap? And the answer is clearly no. And that's the alarming thing. Debating who's better, I just think it's pointless. The problem is that the Giants are getting similar, if not better results.
They're getting better results
with Tyrod Taylor than they have gotten so far this year with Daniel Jones. And this whole neck injury thing, I think people are sort of looking at it like it's like an ankle sprain, and when it's healthy, he's going to be back on the field. This isn't a pain tolerance thing. He hasn't been cleared for contact. So I just want to think about this hypothetically speaking. His first game back is really going to be against the New York Jets in that ferocious pass rush with Andrew Thomas unknown whether or not he's going to be back yet. Like, are we going to just throw him out there? Oh, he's cleared. He's ready to go. I just don't view that injury that way. There has to be a lot of, they have to be cautious with it. You know, this, like I said, this isn't an ankle sprain. It's not a pain tolerance thing. So them just, you know, Daniel's healthy. You know, he's cleared. He's back at practice. He can throw the football as much as he wants. He's not clear for contact. So this whole notion that, you know, Daniel's coming back next week, I don't buy it. I still think this is a, you know, truthfully speaking, if I were to bet, I would say Daniel Jones is not back until the bye week, after the bye week.
I really don't understand, like, what this coaching staff, or I don't know if it's a coaching staff or medical staff, but is doing with some of these, like, head fakes around injuries.
Because during the summer, everything was cautious. A guy would have a paper
cut. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the way they're announcing things. Like, you know, when, you know.
Andrew Thomas.
Yeah.
That was a setback.
It's like, you know, everybody's questionable when it's like very obvious that they're not going to be playing. Like, right.
They're claiming that Andrew Thomas wasn't a setback. They're just like, yeah, he was doing some drills and he just didn't feel confident yet. And they were saying like, oh, he'll be back in 2 weeks.
But that goes back to the big liar thing that you talk about where they're just a bunch of liars. To me, if he's not clear for contact and he gets cleared, all of a sudden he's just going to play.
Well, yeah. You just said it wasn't a pain tolerance thing. If the doctor clears him for contact, then why not?
Piece of that I'd also question is, like, you know, we're talking about the National Football League here. Like, if you're saying that, you know, okay, we're really going to throw you up against the New York Jets. Like, you know, what are the Jets going to do to make this worse? Like, he really shouldn't be going out there against the Arizona Cardinals because, like, you know, we're talking about professional football players.
Well, here's my thing: he's cleared for contact, but how much contact is he cleared for? What's the chances he gets hit again and he gets injured again? How does he get hit on the fifth? When you're clear for contact, are you clear to take one hit, two hits, three hits per game, four hits per game, five hits per game?
No, you're just cleared.
I don't know, man. This neck injury thing, it's a scary situation. I just don't understand. I thought for sure when he got hit in Miami, it was a minimum 4 week thing. Now all of a sudden they're listing him questionable on, you know, like, it just, like Will said, that doesn't make sense what they're doing.
No, they're playing games.
It's gamesmanship. It's entirely gamesmanship for the other team to, like, even if they know Jones probably isn't going to play, just, you know, 5-10% that he is, it's something they have to account for. Ethan, you recall a couple years ago when Marian Hossa, a professional hockey player who was almost 40 years old, magically developed an allergy to the hockey equipment he had been wearing the previous 30 years when it became convenient for the Chicago Blackhawks salary cap situation. I am not saying the Giants are going to attempt to perform similar shenanigans with this Daniel Jones contract. I am saying it is not out of the realm of possibility that this neck injury plays into a situation where they are extra cautious with it for that exact reason that Weiss is talking about, where if they throw him back out there and he takes one more bad lick and they don't have whatever type of protections they need for this, they're stuck paying that out. So there is a world where this injury becomes something more than it is. And I agree with what Will is saying, that this is the NFL. Anybody out there that is on that field lands on you wrong, that's it. We're talking about a neck injury here and something that he's had before and something that, you know, when we're talking about he has a neck injury and he's got pain in the left side of his body from it, that's not just your run-of-the-mill knee ankle, as Weiss was saying. It's the gamesmanship stuff works to some extent. It's to kind of, I don't want to say keep the other team occupied, but that's really all it is. We're kind of in the dark as much as everyone else.
If you guys watched The Last Dance, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys remember when Jerry Reinsdorf was talking about Michael Jordan's foot injury? And he's like, he uses that, you know, metaphor. If I give you 10 pills and one of the pills can kill you, would you still take the pills? Like, you have a 90% chance of not, you know, re-injuring yourself. And he's like, well, you know, I forgot the line, but Michael said something along the lines, well, I'm drawing blanks, but it's sort of similar to that. Like, if, okay, he's cleared for contact, but what's the likelihood of him taking another hit and re-injuring himself? Like, that, like, that's the whole thing. Is like,
so I'm just going to real quick. I mean, I think, you know, I do think there's some, you know, valid points that could be considered that we're voicing. None of us are, you know, qualified to really speculate much here. And I think, you know, a lot of this conversation is not really where we can add our best takes. I do think what, you know,
disagree.
I do think there's a really interesting question though about, you know, I disagree with Weiss where we're talking about, like, is it interesting to talk about who's the better quarterback of what we have? You know, I agree that neither of them are probably going to be the starting quarterback in 2026, but a big part of Tyrod looking better is the line looking more functional. And, you know, it's a little bit of chicken or the egg. I think, you know, Tyrod has made decisions that have made the line look better and avoided the decisions that have made the line look really bad in some cases. But there's, you know, and I've definitely been very loud that I don't want to give up on Evan Neal. But is Phillips replacing him today? Did that make us better? I didn't look too closely. I was at the game. You know, I didn't really see much. But one, I'm bringing this up in terms of, like, even if the offense looking better with Tyrod, I think we need to mitigate necessarily the quarterback's role in that just based on the performance of the line, you know. But two, there might be a real question there about where, if at all, is Evan Neal going to fit in this line as people get back healthy again. Curious what everybody thinks.
Well, to add to the quarterback discussion before we jump over to Evan Neal, because that's far less exciting, there are a number of angles here with the Jones injury. And one that we haven't discussed is, how much are you protecting him so that down the stretch, assuming the Giants are eliminated, you can throw him in there and say, look, he's healthy. Look what he can do. Maybe he has a couple good games. Because if you realize that this team is going to be looking for their quarterback, and I don't think it's outlandish with two wins and the team looking as bad as they do on offense, and you look at a second-year GM and a head coach who are probably fed up and who probably want the opportunity to select their own guy, with a GM who's flying all over the country for the second year in a row this early in the season scouting quarterbacks, at what point do you start plotting, basically? He's not the quarterback next year. We structured the contract so that, yeah, if he's on the roster, we could get out of it after year two. But if we keep him healthy and he plays half decent down the stretch, would there be a team that would take him and the contract as sort of like a favor, knowing they could get out of it and use him as a bridge guy? Like, I don't think that's crazy.
It's not insane, no. It's definitely within the realm of possibility. I can see a world where that happens. I also think it was very weird based on, like, the lead up to this week.
I mean, look at the amount of contact this guy can fucking take. Like, neck injury be damned. If he comes back and he's healthy, like, this is a guy that's perfect for a rebuilding team who can go behind a bad offensive line and just eat shit for a year. He's done it his whole career. Like, fuck it.
I think he gets paid too much to use him as a tackling dummy effectively. I think that's the issue.
Not for a bad team that doesn't have anywhere to use their cap space.
But there's injury guarantees in the contract where if he suffers an injury, then the contract
after year three and after year two?
No. What I'm saying is that based on what you're saying, if they were just going off your theory, if they were to bring him back later in the season, look right, what he can do, and he gets injured again, then there's the contract next year can become guaranteed.
The next year is guaranteed anyway. We're looking at, he's either on the team next year as a backup to whoever they draft, and then he's released the next year, or trade him. He is someone's bridge guy for them to be a bad team and draft a quarterback, and then they release him. It doesn't matter if there's an out after year two, injury or not.
I think it's pretty simple the way I look at it. I don't think it's actually, if they're bad enough where they're picking high to draft a quarterback, I think that's on the table. If they're not, they're not going to. I don't see this as a scenario where it's like,
I'm not saying that.
But I don't think they're trying to plot themselves into a position where it's like, hey, you know, come week 11, we're just going to put Jones back out there and, hey, see what you can do. You know, just because we're trying to plot ourselves to get out of, you know, or trying to sell Daniel Jones off. I don't think it's like that. When he's cleared, he's going to play quarterback. If they lose games and they're in position to draft a quarterback, that's on the table. If they're not, they're going to move forward with Jones because that's the bed that they made and they're going to lay in it. I don't think there's no plot where they're trying to play like, hey, let's find a way if we can, you know, get out of the Jones contract after year one. Let's see if I just don't think that's the case. Healthy, play. Not healthy, not going to play and move forward. And if they're in position for a quarterback, they're taking a quarterback. If they're not in position for a quarterback, they're not going to take a quarterback. It's just a simple way I look at it.
I think that's the simplest way to look at it. And you're not wrong, but you also have to assume that they want to draft a quarterback. They don't want this contract on the books. And if there's a way that they can get out of it, they're going to try.
They gave him the contract a year ago.
Correct. And I think you don't think that they're regretting it?
I mean, regretting it, if they go back, would they change their mind? Sure. But
okay, that's a regret. But
I also don't think it's a, hey, let's start plotting ourselves into a position where we could, you know, have this type of, you know, have.
I'm just saying, your take, unless I have it wrong, was that they're playing it suspiciously cautious based on the fact that it's a neck injury. They're saying, oh, he might not play. All right. Well,
no, I think the whole
way. I think what Wes's take is that we are underestimating how cautiously the Giants are going to take this.
Yes. And I think it's because of the history of the neck injury more so than, hey, let's just continue to play Tyrod because we're trying to plot ourselves to get out of the Daniel Jones contract.
Well, playing Tyrod's not part of the plot, but I do think that
they're not trying to plot themselves to get out of the Daniel Jones contract with this thing. I think they're really trying to be cautious with it.
Sure. And healthy, there is going to be a legitimate conversation to be had about who should be starting if they win another one or two games.
They've already said he's the starting.
Of course, they have to say that, dude. They paid him fucking gajillion dollars. Based on performance, Tyrod has been better, 100%. If this team was the Jets right now, and Aaron Rodgers was playing like complete ass, and Zach Wilson was like playing competent football right now, and all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers is healthy.
Stop.
They're going with Zach Wilson. Well, I think, you know, Giants would stick with Tyrod Taylor if they were 3-3 right now.
You can look at some examples for the 49ers, but what I would say is I think what I really look at is like Jalen Hyatt, maybe Wandale, maybe like Darren Waller. And I'd see like
all three of those guys are eating with Tyrod.
But you know, what are these guys able to do with, with the quarterback? And if Tyrod continues, to play a couple of games, if they continue to look like good players, and then DJ can't make them seem like part of the offenses, then I do think DJ's, they're not going to move on from him without giving him another look. But I do think that he might have a shorter leash than anyone would have really expected going into the season.
But here's the thing about the whole shorter leash thing. If they, and I sort of said this with Zach Wilson too last year, if they bench Daniel Jones,
they can't go back.
So you have to prepare yourself like, okay, if I bench this guy, he's not my quarterback of the future. I can't have him on the roster. Yeah, I understand from your perspective, but what's their alternative?
Well, that's the question of, do you think that this regime is willing to say, because they kind of did last year with the, not picking up the option and then signing him to a much bigger contract. Do you think they're willing to say, oh, we got it wrong again and leave a quarterback with that salary on the bench? Because what quarterbacks of that salary have we seen on the bench? Eli Manning in 2019. What else has, really been recent?
No, I think there's two separate arguments, right? Like, would they pull the plug on Daniel Jones during year one or after year one? And the answer is during the year, no, I don't think so. After the year, yeah. But what's the alternative? Are they picking high where they can grab one of the top quarterbacks? Yes, I could see a scenario where they're doing that. But if they're picking 9 or 10 or whatever, like, no, I don't see that as a realistic scenario where they'll say, we're pulling the plug on Daniel Jones.
Bills traded up for Josh Allen.
I think there's a good chance that
pay Tyrod Taylor $160 million a year before. It was easy to move up. Someone has to be willing to move back. These are conversations to have after the year, but specifically during the year, unless you guys see something different than I do, I just don't see how they would bench Daniel Jones at any point during the season for performance-based.
I disagree.
If they do, kudos to them, but I just don't see it.
Yep. All right, well.
Okay, so I do think there's a chance that Jones starts playing again and plays himself into looking like a much better quarterback than he looked at the beginning of the year. I think, I always hate looking at, how much burn people got in preseason games, because I think there's so much more that happens behind the scenes, relative to what happens to be on TV. But it did seem like that they were too conservative with Jones's playing time, that the offense wasn't ready for the beginning of the season. And you've seen it with the defense. It would make sense to me that the offense is kind of starting to click, figuring themselves out. As Thomas gets back, Jones looks a lot better. I also learned something recently. This was the scoop that we alluded to at the beginning of the call about Jones. And it's weird to be revealing this publicly because, you know, this is personal, but I learned recently that Jones lost his grandfather, who was very close with him, right before the Seattle game. And what I specifically learned was after the game, Dable mentioned this to the beat and said, like, I don't want this getting out. I don't want anybody looking at it like an excuse. I don't think anybody would look at it like an excuse. And I'm not, you know, saying it, you know, to kind of absolve any player, you know, anything like that. But obviously it does have an effect on somebody, and, you know, that's worth mentioning. But what I've also heard is that the way that this was presented was really weird. Dable basically said, okay, we're off the record, and just started talking and really put the reporters in a bind because there wasn't really a two-party consent to this. We're off the record. And they just basically were asked not to say anything without really kind of buying in. So it was kind of this open secret that nobody, as you know, has reported for the last 3 weeks. And I've confirmed this kind of with some people who I've spoken to, but I've also found out that this information trickled its way to me because among the Giants beat, different people respected Brian Dable's wishes. And one reporter who obviously has shown that he has not honored his word, you know, to members of this podcast, and really, I feel like has not shown integrity, you know, through his job, but Ralph Facciano told a room full of people to try to impress them with his information. So he broke the coach's confidence, and that information leaked its way out to me. But obviously, first and foremost, you know, it's terrible to lose a family member, especially one you're close to. So, you know, our hearts go out to DJ, and you know, as a dude, you know, we hope he's doing the best. And it's conceivable that, you know, Seattle, which was one of his worst games, it's conceivable that whatever was going on played a role, not as an excuse, but just, you know, if we're being objective, that, you know, that's a factor that was on his mind. And Ralph, the Giants deserve better than you. The players deserve better than you. The coaches deserve better than you, and the fans deserve better.
Amen. So Ralph Facciano, noted scumbag, has had me blocked for, well over a year now, I think.
Who has agreed to come on this podcast, I know, and then never followed up, which, you know, I'm sure he's, you know, going to be in a rush.
That's
to do
right.
It
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Not the best of reporters, in my opinion.
No,
I agree.
All right. What else is there to discuss?
So you never answered the question about the line. Do you think they're going to potentially look at not giving Neil a spot back?
No, I think Neil was playing well. Like, he played, I'm not going to say well. He was coming together against
showed Buffalo. Signs of life.
Yeah.
I thought the Buffalo game was a good game.
Playing through an ankle injury. I like that they gave him a week off. By the way, you know what? Tyree Phillips went to Philadelphia, came back a better offensive lineman.
Surprise, surprise.
So I did say this.
The Eagles know what they're doing.
Start the call when you guys asked, you know, how I was doing. I said, you know, I was doing great, and I, you know, implied that I'm doing less great, you know. And I personally, I'm orientated very differently than you guys are for the season. I'm looking to win games. You know, I felt like I could understand wanting losses under the last regime because I felt like it was more important for the last regime to have a wake up call than for, you know, anything about the draft capital. And I don't necessarily think that this wake-up call is needed. I do trust that this regime is going to be objective. So I want to beat our divisional opponents. I still want to find success in the season. I realize that there'll be a time where I'd be like, well, wouldn't it have been great to get, you know, a better quarterback potentially and, you know, risk some of that, you know, but for right now I'm trying to do that. Where I'm upset is my second favorite team really got manhandled today, and that, as you probably know, my second favorite team is whoever's playing the Philadelphia Eagles, and
that was brutal.
Yeah, it's been off too.
It's been brutal. I mean, I mean just hearing the brotherly shove, watching the brotherly shove
over and over and over,
it's just unstuck, and every time, and then you see a flag and it's offsetting, and like, you know, the man, I hate that team. I hate the suburb of New York, as I call it. But
yeah,
can I point out one thing I noticed, which I've been noticing for a while?
About what?
So you look at, like, the Giants roster and the positions, right? And you see the areas that are, you know, exceeding sort of expectations, or you're seeing a lot of the young guys step up. The defensive back room, the wide receiver room now with Jalen Hyatt, Wandell Robinson. And then you look at the areas that are continuing to struggle. You know, the offensive line, special teams. And I think it goes to show, Will, you seem to think that Bobby Johnson is getting too much flack. I want to know why you think that. Because there's evidence that shows, like, the offensive line was bad, but the talent level that they had on the offensive line has been better than what they had in the secondary at times in the receiver room. But we're seeing the receiver room kind of come together. We're seeing the defensive back room come together. The defensive line room now is stepping up again. But yet, special team struggles, offensive line struggles. But you think we're being too hard on, or you think that Bobby Johnson doesn't deserve blame?
No, that's not the take. My take,
or doesn't deserve to get fired.
I would say that I think that very generally, there's a epidemic online of somebody reads some thought and then repeats it as their own, and then everybody kind of snowballs into thinking like, oh yeah, like of course this is, you know, a move that makes sense. Yeah, the line doesn't look good, so you fire the offensive line coach, and you know, of course, you know, that's what happens. I think there are just more variables at play that not necessarily more variables at play, but I think Andrew Thomas obviously getting hurt, you know, completely derailed the season, and you know, and it's been figuring out how to plug that in, that's been important. And I also, as we've discussed, I don't know what Daniel Jones has done that's made the offensive line look bad, or if it's the offensive line that's made Daniel Jones look bad. And I think if Tyrod can make this line look operable, and I feel like, you know, frankly, from what I've seen in the last 2 weeks since we've had Pugh in the fold, given the injuries on the line, I think the line's done a fairly good job. You know, not just like, you know, not terrible, but I'd say fairly good. Mostly my take is that you don't move on from Bobby Johnson until you know what you're moving to. Like, I don't think, you know, replacing Bobby Johnson with some interim coach, you know, until you kind of have a guy for next year is going to do anything to, you know, get things better. I don't think it's like he's actively making people worse. And I think that there's an idea on Twitter that he is, because people, like, you know, look at a few things. I mean, obviously, you know, Glowinski, I think, is my biggest disappointment. I thought Glowinski was a really solid guy with the Colts. I was excited about that signing. It was really the intentional signing that was made that offseason. And, you know, he can't get snaps. I mean, now he has, obviously, but it was, you know, we had to pull teeth essentially with injuries to get him snaps back. But, you know, I'm not going to say I'm happy with his job. I'm just thinking that we get him out of the room and all of a sudden things are going to get together, which is not necessarily the thought out take. You know, a lot of people say the Giants really should invest in one of the top offensive line minds out there. And that I'm all for that. If, you know, if there's somebody who, the Giants say we could do a better job with him, we can find a way to bring him in as a consultant, transition to him, whatever that may be. But I think, like, okay, the line, you know, the line hasn't been up to par. We've got to, you know, we must do something. This is something we must do. This is the wrong approach.
So we got to be fair for a second. I definitely agree with your take about Daniel Jones and how much sacks he's producing, but I don't think anybody will sit here and tell you he's the main culprit for the offensive line struggles. My thing is you talk about the confidence you have in the front office, and I sort of share some of that confidence with you so far. But they've drafted an offensive tackle with the top 10 pick. They drafted a guard who was sort of, you know, Azudu, who was also their left tackle in the third round. They've made these sort of investments, but, you know, through 2 years, none of these young guys have gotten better. Isn't that the result enough for you to be like, well, wait a second? Because I look around the league, and forget about, you know, investing in the top offensive line coaches. If you look around the league, you know, there's an offensive line, you know, the in general, offensive line play is down, but teams are still able to look functional. The Giants are not able to look functional. We're not able to look functional for the majority of the season with their offensive line. Isn't that enough for you to be like, well, either, you know, this front office that I'm super confident in is not, you know, producing the talent needed, or like, what's the issue then? Because if it's not the GM, then who is it?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think you've got to be really precise, because I think, you know, it's very easy to, you know, obviously we know that the GM inherited a terrible situation.
Absolutely.
So let's look player by player. Evan Neal, top 10 pick. Okay. Yes. Evan Neal was not necessarily Joe Shane, you know, saying, you know, going into a, you know, a back room, coming out and saying, you guys will never believe what I came up with. I feel like 30 teams would have taken him with, you know, with that slot.
He was number one on the Cowboys board.
I thought he was going to be the number one pick in the draft up until like 2 weeks before the draft.
He was a very, very blue chip decision, you know.
Absolutely.
That was a chalk pick. Like, you know, we took him. He checks pretty much every box. If he ends up being a bust, there's only so much of that I feel like you can put on Shane, because it's somebody that everybody would have taken. It's the same way with Trevor Lawrence. If Trevor Lawrence turns out to be a bust, you know, you're not going to be like, wow, what the hell was that guy thinking? If, you know, if it's a decision everyone would make, you know, Glowinski looks, you know, as bad as I feel like that could have gone. I think that's partially on Shane, partially on the lack of resources, you know, partially maybe even on DJ, and partial, you know, and obviously partially on, you know, on the coaching staff. I have no complaint.
John Feliciano looks a lot better in San Francisco than he did with us last year.
That would be exactly kind of what I'd say is, you know, part of that's the quarterback.
Well, and here's the thing. There's certain things you can chalk up to, that's just a coincidence. There's certain things you can say, you know, that's on Daniel Jones' shoulder, some of that blame. But, and Ethan, Nick, like, chime in if you want. But
I'm on the fire Bobby Johnson train. Everyone knows where I stand.
Like, I just want to know, Will, if it's not the offensive line coach, right, and it's not the general manager, you can't convince me that it's all on the quarterback. You just can't.
They haven't developed a single offensive lineman. Like,
and that's just Andrew
Thomas is a fucking unicorn.
John Feliciano's playing in San Francisco is playing above average football as a center. You can't just keep chalking every single thing up as, you know, not this person's fault, not that person's fault.
Everyone's talking about all these ex-Giants who are around the league, you know, playing different roles. Nobody mentions Evan Brown, who was like the bottom of the roster guy we had for a couple years at the beginning of like at the Shermer era. He's a starting center now for Seattle.
And he's going to be a free agent after this year too, and he can play guard too. I'm just saying.
I hear what you're saying, but I think, you know, if you're looking at what you're expecting for like a reasonable timeline of development, I think, you know, Azudu's probably a little behind schedule given the draft capital that's gone into him. McKeithen had ankle injury, okay. is basically a fifth round rookie. Where I think my biggest concern with the general manager was, if you're not confident enough in your swing tackle to play him when you need a swing tackle to play tackle snaps, how do you not upgrade that tackle when you're, you know, getting adding to the depth at so many other positions? That's my biggest critique, I think, of Shane on the offensive line. But I think a lot of the offensive line drafting decisions were made about building a sustained offensive line, not building an immediate offensive line. And I love that approach. I'd much rather the Giants, you know, draft guys, do their best to develop them. And, you know, if they're coming up short, whatever, you want to keep plugging the, filling the pipeline. I'd much rather do that than what, you know, we tried to do in 2018 with, you know, signing some top, you know, mediocre guys to top dollar and hope that they can keep you respectable.
I go ahead. My old thing is, I'm just asking a simple question. I look at the offensive line in four parts, right? Talent, intangibles, size, you know, skill set, mind. Then you look at your game plan, how you plan on using them, and then your the player's overall technique. Now, technique you can teach.
You think of Michael Scott saying, like, you know, railroads.
Well, no. Intangibles are intangibles are broken down in different things, right? So intangibles and then talent, that's on the GM. They look at certain things and what they want. Game plan, how you use this player, and then their overall, you know, technique, that can be worked on with the coaching staff, right? So we agree Evan Neal had talent, right? Blue chip player. So we'll set that aside. Josh Azudu had good intangibles, was a good athlete, you know, versatile, played along the offensive line. That's all we heard when they picked him in the third round. At least that's what I remember. But like Ethan says, like, these guys haven't gotten better. And forget about being bad. Like, there's bad and then there's functional. I think over the last 2 weeks, the offensive line has been bad, below average bad. Weeks prior to that, they were not functional. So I want to ask you one more time. I hope you can answer it for me. If it's not on the general manager, then who's it on? And please don't answer it with going back to 2018, going back 17, because I hate your stance on Bobby Johnson.
You know, I think the blame goes around, and I'm not talking about, you know, going back to 2017 or 2018. I'm just talking about in terms of calibrating expectations. Like, you know, I never believed, you know, the one thing about that despicable predecessor of Joe Shane that I think he got right is he said, you know, I'm not going to come here and say that we're going to build the line in 1 year or 2 years because John's going to laugh
at
building.
Right.
And I think that's correct. You don't try to rush, rush into building that. And, you know, and they're trying to build it from the ground up, and that's going to be a slow process. And I think to answer your question is, I think there is blame that goes around, and nobody's
okay, but slow process is fine, but no improvement and looking like you don't belong.
Regression. It's not even no improvement. It's regression.
Josh Izudu was crying after a football game. That's how bad they were. It's in my mind, it's really not that complicated. Like we don't talk about Bobby Johnson as being this like fucking revered offensive line coach that everyone's going to be after if we fire him. It's not like you can get, like, if you were to fire him and bring in Weiss to coach the offensive line, like, seriously, what's the downgrade going to be? Like, I don't think it's going to be that big a drop off. Like, we're at the point where if you do the same thing over and over again with the same results, you're fucking crazy. So, like, okay, the team's 1-5. The fans want some blood. Fine. Make them happy. Throw them a bone. If it's not going to be the special teams coordinator, make it the offensive line coach. Bring in a fucking consultant, because it can't get worse than it's getting.
And don't tell me position coach doesn't matter, because we're seeing
Andrew Thomas. The fact that Andrew Thomas turned into Andrew Thomas is a goddamn miracle. He is a unicorn. Based on everything that we've seen with the offensive line talent that's come in over the years and under Bobby Johnson, that he turned out to be an all-pro is nothing short of a miracle. And we haven't seen any improvement from Evan Neal from year one to year two. We haven't seen any improvement from Izudu, Bredesen, Lemieux. Yeah. Like, these are guys that, like, we don't expect much, but, like, coach them up a little bit so that when they do have to get snaps and play, it's not a drop back sack. Every single play. Like, you just spent seventh overall on Neal. You spent a high second round pick on your future starting center. Like, invest in these guys like you invested picks in them.
Who's been the best offensive lineman for the Giants the last 2 weeks?
Justin Pugh.
Thank you very much. Come on.
I don't think so.
Who's been the best Giants offensive lineman the last 2 weeks?
Pugh's obviously taken on the biggest assignment, playing left tackle, but yeah, I think I I've got to rewatch the game. You know, it's different from 35 rows up than really
sure.
down. But I read that Pugh got beat three times for sacks today.
Yeah,
I love the guy. You know, like, but best offensive line for the last three. I mean, Glowinski. Like,
I think that the improvement with the Giants offensive line is tied directly to Justin Pugh coming in to the room.
Completely agree, and I think, and for that same reason, actually, I think that's a good transition to one other point that I was hoping to make before this was over. We spoke after the week two game, when I said what looks like presciently now that, you know, when Wandale's back and, you know, Hyatt's up to speed, I don't really see where Paris Campbell's getting his snaps. I didn't expect it to be zero snaps on offense, but, you know, I'm not, you know, really crying over that. For the same reason you're talking about, you know, liking Pugh in there, and I think Pugh brings the best out of everybody else, I want to see Sterling Shepard having like a few snaps a game, just because that's the same. He's the same way. He will light a fire under a lineman for missing the block. And, you know, we talk about how this team doesn't really have that, you know, get in your face teammate who holds people accountable. And I think he's one of the few guys, and I can't really see anybody else in the wide receiver unit who does that. So I will, you know, I think it might be, you know, it's interesting to talk about kind of like how you see the wide receiver chart looking for the rest of the year, and kind of who, you know, and who might you think, you know, is a long-term answer. So, you know, I'll open it up to everyone else before I kind of give more thoughts there.
I really like Wandale Robinson. That's why I got to credit my man Ethan, because, you know, my confidence in Wandale was very bleak, but Ethan kept telling me, man, they got a plan for him. And I do think Wandale, like, he'll never be that elite wide receiver one. But he is
he wasn't drafted to be one.
Yeah, he's a 90 catch a year security blanket. guy that can move the chains. Yeah,
he's Black Cole Beasley.
Put him in different spots, and he can just do different things. And sometimes those are very valuable receivers to have. And you kind of see his role emerging, and he's really fitting into it nicely. And then Jalen Hyatt, I mean, the speed is there. I tweeted this as a joke. You know, he's my wide receiver one. I really do think just off his speed alone, he's such a game-changing player. For me, I don't know how else you can get him the ball, but I think the Giants have to find
ways. You know how you get him the ball, Weiss? You keep Tyrod Taylor at quarterback.
You got to get the ball to Jalen Hyatt more. I love the fact that they were throwing to him. Those two guys are the most important parts of the wide receiver room going forward. Everything behind there is just, you know, sure, you want to give Sterling Shepard the ball, Darius Slayton, Isaiah Hodgins, fine. But to me, Wandale and Jalen Hyatt are the most important parts of that receiving room going forward for the rest of the year. Their development will go a long way in determining how good this team can be. They're very important parts of the future.
Where are they supposed to? I mean, Will, that goes back to your argument. Like, preseason, you didn't really understand what the wide receiver hierarchy was going to be. I think that's exactly why guys like Sterling Shepard aren't getting snaps. I was surprised they even brought him back, to be honest. Like, this year's purely about development. There's no more development for Sterling Shepard. If he wants to be, you know, a veteran voice in the wide receiver room, God bless him. If he wants to be a veteran voice on the bench, if he decides he wants to start actually successfully fielding punts, God bless. That would be nice. But I mean, listen, this is Wandale's role. Like, He's the man. Give him touches, and that's it. And for Hyatt, I agree. The number one thing we were talking about Hyatt is what the Giants coaching staff was saying. Not the coaching staff. I think it was Brandon Brown, actually. Like, just because a guy wasn't asked to do something in college doesn't mean he couldn't do it. This guy needs snaps. I want to see him as more than just a deep threat. Like, I don't want him to just be someone who can take the top off. Like, I want him being thrown screens. I want to see him in the slot. I want to see him doing literally everything, because his speed is such a weapon that if he can learn to do those things successfully, he gets better in his route running. And he's not just a go ball guy. Why not? Why can't he become a wide receiver one for this team? Why can't he be like an every year 1,000-yard, 10 touchdown kind of guy? Like, I mean, the speed's there. Hands are there. Let him develop the route tree. The guy's got to get more and more snaps and more targets each week. And I don't see why it couldn't happen.
I think the way we get there is if the offense can do more schematically. I think that's been the biggest issue for him. Tyrod Taylor is the band-aid. I think long-term, to get Jalen Hyatt to where you want him to be our version of DeSean Jackson, the over-the-top guy who can also go for 1,000 yards on the whole season, is they need to be able to do more stuff schematically, and they haven't been able to do that this year.
How does that happen?
The quarterback. It hasn't happened because
no one's saying Tyrod Taylor is the long-term solution. But if you're asking me right now, who is more important to the development of the people around him?
It's the quarterback. For sure. I agree with you on that 100%.
Shake your head, Weiss. You know it's true.
That was something someone texted me in the group chat today. In one of my group chats today, how come the Giants are actually throwing the ball to Hyatt? How come he's in the game so much? And I go, well, Jones isn't playing quarterback, so they actually are taking shots.
Yeah,
that's the answer. He's actually getting on the field. Where, I mean, Ethan, what was it, week two or three, where he got like three snaps the whole game?
I just want this for the record. Ethan, you actually believe there's a legitimate shot that they pull the plug on Daniel Jones in year one during the season?
For performance?
At some point, yes. I agree with you that when he's healthy, he comes back.
Yeah, right.
And he's the starter. Absolutely.
So let's say he comes back in the Jets. 2-3 weeks go by, back to struggling.
You think what's the schedule?
You guys know what's going to happen, right?
It's Jet. What?
Tyrod's going to have a few good games. Jones is going to come back. Jones is going to struggle. They're going to go turn the keys over to Tyrod. Weiss is going to say, all right, now you can't go back to Jones ever. And then Tyrod's going to get injured, and Jones is going to get. It's going to be just like Zach.
But how can you go back if you bench Daniel Jones?
No, of course, I know, but it's, you know, just like saying, the way, like, it's setting up. It's
for me, if they go back to when Jones is healthy and he's a starter again, and at any point,
Weiss, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Week one, 2024, is Daniel Jones the starting quarterback for this team?
Yes, because I think this team is going to win some games this year.
I agree.
I think you're wrong.
Because their defense. These quarterbacks are not good that they're playing.
This offense is not good.
I know, but they'll win games 20-17, you know, 20.
I would be shocked if they scored more than 10 points on the Jets.
Okay. I wouldn't be surprised if they hold the Jets to 6 points. How about that?
Okay.
Zach Wilson is still a sack of shit. Don't forget.
Jets versus Giants. Forget the Jets.
Yeah. Let's give them defense a loss.
Defense versus offense. Who's going to score more points, like, for both units?
I think Jets defense.
I mean, look at their schedule after, you know, I think they'll beat the Raiders. I think they'll beat the Packers. That gives them 4 wins. And I think they get one more. Either New Orleans, the Rams, or
okay, so they have the ninth pick.
They get to five. They get to five.
Okay, so whatever. So what does 5 wins get you? What pick?
Maybe pick, you know, 9.
Okay, 9. You can't see Joe Shane trading up to 2 or 3?
No.
I can.
No, Ethan, you know what's going to happen? You know the meme of the really nice car sitting next to the trailer park house? That's going to be Maserati Marvin Harrison on the Giants next year.
The worst.
Yeah. Maserati Marv.
By the way, people talk about Gus Johnson. Sometimes Gus Johnson can be really annoying, man. Sometimes I got to put the TV on mute.
So I watched the Arizona State versus Washington.
Especially these Big Ten games, man, where it's like, you know, 7-3 in the fourth quarter and this guy's talking like it's, you know, a exciting boxing fight and it's like back and forth. It's like, come on, man.
Try.
Boys, I watched the end of the Arizona State Washington game yesterday, which ended at, like, you know, almost.
Me too. I watched it too. Yeah.
And then the TV completely transitioned right to the beginning of the Ohio State Penn State game. And I got to experience it all over again.
Yes.
And just it like felt like in his voice, he was waiting for it. He's like, I am just going to bury you.
Well, the thing was, I was watching on my iPad in bed, and when the game ended, it went to the Penn State Ohio State game again. And I didn't know I had my headphones turned up high. The reason why I'm laughing is because actually the headphones were so loud when he came back on that my wife actually woke up and was like, what is that? That's why I'm laughing about that. That's why I'm saying it was so annoying because he woke my wife up last night. But
I found it endearing. I find, give me 10 Maserati Mars for every, you know.
I know, but dude, it's a 20-6 game. You know, it's been they're punting back and forth, and this guy's yelling up the top of his lungs. Come on.
Marvin Harrison was the best player on the field in that game. He deserved it. He deserved it. He was great.
So anyway. I've said I want to win this year. I said, I'm not ready to, you know, just pull the plug on Bobby Johnson without a better alternative. I want to give you guys one more kind of take that you can all kind of unite and disagree with me. Fourth quarter.
Your specialty.
Fourth quarter, I like the punt.
Me too.
I didn't like it.
You know, they couldn't go down the field.
The defense was dominating the game. I feel like, you know, even if you...
Here's my take on that. If the defense is dominating the game, who cares where Sam Howell gets the ball? It's not like they were automatically in field goal range. Still had to, and they needed a touchdown. Like,
my rebuttal to that is when they muffed the punt and they got the ball at like the 30, they went down and scored a touchdown.
I thought it was much closer than the 30.
It was like inside the 30.
No, okay. That was the beginning of the third quarter. I just went to say hello to TJ, and by the time I got back to the section, I'd looked up, and my neighbor in my at my seats said, yeah, you didn't realize we were on defense. I saw your face fall. Like, you know, it was like, you know, more than 10 minutes left in the third.
Ethan, they're one for 17 on third downs. Sam Howell couldn't do shit. I understand.
Yeah. So what's he going to do with the 50 that he you, can't? Well, the thing he, is, you don't want to do with the, his own 20.
So here's the thing: you don't
want to make him keep. You got to make him keep, you know, parlaying those legs together. You know, we talk about so much about how, like, when, you know, with Daniel Jones, we haven't seen an offense that can. You know, it has to put so many plays together for a score to happen. Exactly. How difficult that is! You got to make them stack those plays up together.
We're talking about 1 yard. I'm fucking going for it.
No, here's the thing: if you give it to him at midfield, one penalty there, field goal, right?
They needed a touchdown.
I understand what you're saying, but if you punt it to them, like Will said, he has to go. He has to run more plays and get down the field. The more times he was dropping back, it was
guys. I understand the simple math. Like, I'm not retarded here. I understand that Sam Howell, it's much harder for Sam Howell to go from his own 20 to the end zone than it is to go from midfield to the end zone. We're talking about 1 yard,
the point
to
that
drain more clock, put the game away, and he couldn't move the ball anyway.
You want to be mad about something, you're mad that Saquon Barkley fumbled the ball.
Yeah, because that was a full possession after that. And we can, you know, I don't need to, you know, necessarily go there. But
how come your GM is not willing to trade Saquon Barkley and gave him this assurance?
I have a real problem with that.
The insurance
just feels so unnecessary, and it frankly feels like it's, you know, it's his off the field stuff that's mattering more than
that's enough. That's why you should be rooting for losses. Well,
I don't think they're even.
They lose today. We're having a different conversation. We haven't talked once about the trade deadline.
Besides that stupid little, you know, comment that was made, and like, you know, I want to be a Giant for life, which I just feel like is like, you know, it's, I want that kind of on the resume, regardless of, you know, what it does to the team. I'm not nearly as bothered with him being here as I was in the past, because I don't feel like he's being like shoved down fans' throats as a pacifier. I feel like he's a guy, you know, he's a guy on the team who's trying to help us win. It, you know, I feel like there's a, you know, I don't feel like I'm being gaslit with him, you know, by the team.
Well, it's much tougher to do when you're 1-5.
We're 2-5 now, Ethan. Keep up.
I know. I'm talking about prior to this week.
My whole thing is, you didn't want to pay him last offseason. Doesn't seem like you're going to pay him again this offseason. So what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Anyways, 2-5, Jet Week coming up. I don't know what else you guys want to add.
That's it. Let's wrap up. I'm exhausted.
Go ahead, wrap us up. Will, any final words?
Maserati Marv. Not going to the Panthers because why, Ethan?
Because the Panthers don't own their pick. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at Ethan.
He might be a giant.
Yeah. Not unless they have
generational wide receiver with a generational running back. Who can say no to that?
The Giants right. Going into 2019 because they realize that they have to build the rest of the roster.
Who can say no to a generational running back and a generational wide receiver, baby?
All right. I'm going to go eat goldfish and watch Netflix. I'm not even going to do the housekeeping. You know where to follow us. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.